We're speaking now with Sage Dixon, and he is our state representative for District 1. Sage, thank you for taking time from what I know is a really busy schedule down there to speak with us.
Well, I'm happy to do it, Chris. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, let's start out with your assessment of how things are going. We're into the session now, not quite 2 months. How do you feel things are progressing down there with the various pieces of legislation that are being handled?
Well, you said it earlier. It's very busy right now. It started off slow, and I think I mentioned that when we spoke a number of weeks ago, that it seemed like a very slow start this year. But ever since the ruling came out from the Supreme Court on redistricting, things have really sped up. So I think some representatives were just hesitant to maybe put some things forward until they knew what the landscape for the election was going to look like. And now things are kind of charging along at full speed. We've had some days where we start off at 10 a.m. on the floor. We might take a break for lunch, and then we come back on in the afternoon, and we'll work till 3 o'clock. And just to clear a lot of the bills off the board, because at this point a lot is what we would term cleanup bills, and they're little changes that agencies need to make or some things to catch up to laws that we passed last year. And so those are easy to clear off the board quick. Not a lot of long debates, you would assume, but there have been some long debates on certain topics, but this is, we're right in the thick of it right now. We're halfway through the session. One way to tell that is we have pages that help us down here, and they only stay for 6 weeks. So last week was the end of the first term of pages, and this week we have new pages here that we have to integrate into the committees, and that's always kind of a waymark for where we are in the session. And so we're just a little bit past halfway now.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are some of the big things that will be coming up in the near future? I want to talk about some bills that you've had some votes on, but what are things that are coming up in this second half of the session that you think constituents might want to take a look at and keep an eye on?
Property tax is still a really big issue, and those are conversations that tend to take a little longer. And where we had the income tax and corporate tax reduction come out pretty early, and that was due to the work of the Revenue and Taxation Committee chairman in the House. He was working in the interim with everybody, most interested parties, to try and have that come out early. But now the conversation for property tax is developing through the body, and something was actually printed in the paper this week about an idea that is coming from Senator Rice in the Senate that I thought was pretty innovative and was excited about. Didn't know the specifics yet, and those are still being dealt with a little bit as far as what the numbers would actually look like, but it would raise the sales tax by basically 2%, a little less than 2%, but it would remove property tax on everybody that would get a homeowner's exemption, essentially. So it would be your home where you're living. It wouldn't be rental properties or any commercial properties, but it would be an effort to remove the property tax from folks that are living in the home that they get their homeowner's exemption on. And that seemed pretty innovative and a large change, but that might have a lot of positive effect within the state. There's a lot of things that would be affected by that. One thing is trying to keep renters whole and people that don't own property, but still give them a benefit. So they were talking about raising the grocery sales tax credit, or the grocery tax credit, again, to kind of offset that, to help those people that aren't homeowners. But that seemed like a paradigm shift in tax policy. Now it's hit a couple bumps in the road already, so we haven't seen a bill to be printed yet, but that conversation is still going on. We did have a couple bills printed today in revenue tax on this side that would take a portion of the internet sales tax, and as that gets distributed to counties and cities, that they would be required to take half of those dollars and use it for property tax relief. And there was a similar bill that we had come through the Revenue Tax Committee that did something similar, but it was all of their increase of the sales tax distribution. So it would be a larger amount that they'd have to put towards property tax relief in this, the one bill that we already passed out of committee. And then this one was a similar bill, but just a little bit different iteration. So that's still a large conversation, is trying to give that relief for property tax. And I think we'll be seeing that conversation in the next week or two really hit the floor and start to develop more.
Can I ask you a couple questions on that?
Sure.
The idea with raising the sales tax 2%, is that to allow complete removal of property tax for people living in their home?
It would be removing Every property tax facet except the ones that were voted on. So school bonds and levies would remain in that sense. It wasn't going to give relief there, but it would remove, you know, the county levies, libraries, fire districts, things like that, that were set by a levy set by the jurisdiction, not something that was voted on by the citizens of that area. So the school bonds and levies would still stay.
And I assume that the bill, for instance, taking a portion of internet sales tax, that's just a different way at getting at property tax relief. It wouldn't be something that would pass in addition to this pretty big idea, what you're talking about with the restructuring of with a sales tax.
Correct. I don't think we would pass both of those. And these other, the smaller bites will probably come before the larger one, and then we'd have to kind of rectify that. I'm sure if the larger portion does become more of a reality, the Senate would probably not hear the other bills that are most likely going to pass out of the House. They would just hold on to that while this larger one would be moving, while everybody is agreed on that in what sense. Yeah. So in 2024, right now, sales tax, internet sales tax goes into our taxpayer relief fund, and we've been pulling things out of that to increase the grocery credit and things like that. But in 2024, that all reverts into the general sales tax pool, so it will be getting, the cities and counties will be getting a larger portion of their sales tax distribution, and that's why they're saying this would be appropriate then to use that for property tax relief as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm sure folks are going to be following that, but particularly these property tax relief bills are going to be of great interest, I'm sure.
Right.
Anything else that you would identify coming up that's likely to be of particular interest to our folks up here?
Well, we just today I carried a bill for the Department of Lands that allows them to have the option to increase the pay of wildland firefighters, and so that affects us with the way our summers have been going and all the forest fires that we've been having, in the sense that it's been hard for them to retain firefighters because different states and the federal government offer higher wages, and so they have a large turnover. And so this is an option that they have to increase the wages that they're able to pay when they're fighting a fire. And so hopefully that'll help our friends that work on those fires that live in our community, but also help retain those people that have an option maybe to go work for the U.S. Forest Service or to pop over to Washington or something like that, where they can earn some more money. And so I thought that was a positive, and it passed off the floor today. I don't think it'll have any problem getting through the Senate. So that should be coming law in July and help with the fire season and making sure that we have enough people there to fight those fires.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bill out there that's going to change the way that the community colleges are elected. Right now, they're done by the whole district as a whole, meaning that similar to the way we do our commissioners, that you may live in District 1, but somebody, you will still vote for somebody living in District 3, and this bill would restrict it to only the people within that zone. I'm sorry I said districts, but if you're in the whole voting district, say for North Idaho College, but you lived in Zone 1, you still vote for somebody from Zone 3, but this bill would change that so that you would only vote for the person that's representing your zone. There's some other language in there that allows the Board of Education to make appointments onto the Board of Trustees, and most of the community colleges, well, 3 out of the 4, aren't necessarily in favor of this bill. So it kind of popped up. The College of Western Idaho is interested in it, but I've heard from NIC, and I've heard from the College of Southern Idaho, and as well as the College of Eastern Idaho, and they're not in favor of that bill. But that's something that may change. It doesn't affect us directly in District 1, but we do have a lot of folks that go down to NIC, and we have the satellite campus there. And so that might change the way that board is made up a little bit, but I think they're pulling it back and working on a rewrite now so that all the community colleges will be on board with that. We have not yet got to budget setting, and we had a chairman's meeting this morning and looking at where we are, and there's quite a bit of money being spent because there's quite a bit of a surplus in the state, but we're still not done spending, as it were, with bills coming through. And so there's a lot of concern about what might happen once those budgets hit the floor and some of the debates and possibly budgets not passing. And that may keep us here a little bit longer than we want to be here, but we're trying to get out in front of that and have those conversations now and make sure that the folks setting the budget are hearing from the germane committees so that it's not quite the battle that it can be on the floor. But I think we're still going to have some good debate on the floor about how dollars should be spent, and especially the ARPA dollars. There's still a lot of concern about those and whether it's appropriate to use them at all or what is the best use of them going forward.
Okay. Well, there's going to be a lot to follow. I did want to ask you about a few pieces of legislation we've been seeing in the news up here that have already kind of worked their way through the House, at least. One is a bill that would allow the Powerball lottery to continue in Idaho after the Powerball is expanded to the United Kingdom and Australia. Later this year, apparently, we needed to approve that in order to stay in the Powerball here in Idaho. What was your take on that, and how did you go with that one?
It's sometimes things like that are odd in the debate that they generate and why people have an issue with them. I voted against that because I thought a representative on the State Affairs Committee, where it started, made a very good point. I was presenting a bill in the State Affairs Committee, and so I heard their debate as a committee on that topic, and I normally wouldn't. I'd be in a different committee, but his point was that we are establishing a contract with these other countries at this point and with the Powerball lottery system, but he had not been able to even see that contract. We kind of had the cart before the horse, as it were, and I thought that was a very valid point that he made there in committee. It passed out of committee, and when it came to the floor, he made that same point, and that resonated with me. So I thought it was valuable to know what we are, as a legislature, binding the state to, essentially, without really seeing that contract and what would be required of us in the contract. Some people didn't like the fact that we were going to be in contract with other nations. There's people that just don't like gambling, period, and they voted against it, but it did pass, and it'll go to the Senate, and I'm not sure if it'll have the trouble in the Senate that it had in the House. There's always concern when we enter into contracts or agreements with even other states, but when you're entering into international contracts, that just causes concern about what we're giving up or what we're being required to report and protecting our citizens' privacy and issues like that. But I think it'll be business as usual with Powerball. There's a lot of money that is generated at convenience stores throughout the state, and there were some interesting statistics of a little city of Malad down in southeast Idaho, where a lot of people from Utah drive up, and sometimes they have to have troopers out there, and the highway is shut down because there's lines of people that go to the convenience stores that are just a couple miles inside the border because they're there buying Powerball tickets because the pot has gotten so big. So that generates extra sales for convenience stores, so they were in favor of it. And it's always interesting to hear the dynamics of an issue and how it spreads out away from just what the topic is.
Yeah, there's always things you don't know about are going
right.
to be affecting different people and different constituencies
right.
In different ways. Okay, next one. We only got a few minutes left here, but
okay.
a bill that would require unaffiliated voters to join a political party earlier in the year has passed the House now, and this will require people to affiliate with a political party by March 11th, which is only about, as this goes to air, only about 10 days away. Give me your take on that, and how did you go on that one?
I voted for that, and I wrestled with it a little bit because I do think that people need to be able to make their decisions, and especially with a lot of the new people moving into the state. That was a portion of the debate that I listened to closely, that they may not know the lay of our political land and who's who and haven't decided whether they wanted to register as a Republican or Democrat or just remain unaffiliated. And so I think that that's a danger there of eliminating them or not giving them the opportunity to make that choice later on when they do it. But I also do think it's important that the party is able to choose whom its candidate is. We can vote for whomever we want in the general election, but the primary is the opportunity for each party to determine whom their candidate will be. And that was something that I upheld a little bit higher. I wasn't really firm on that, but that's how I went with that vote. But I do think there is a danger of kind of keeping people out of the process a little bit, and especially with all the new folks that have moved into the area and may not know who's who at this point. They may feel a little bit left out this primary cycle coming up. But
yeah, I think roughly a third of the voters in Idaho are unaffiliated, and at this point they can on election day decide to affiliate, I believe.
Right.
and cast a vote, so they have a chance to size up the probably, I guess, both parties and decide which party they want to be voting in. So
yeah, there's a large percentage.
The criticism is it'll disenfranchise those folks that vote that way.
And I think that's the word I was looking for that wasn't coming to mind as I was saying keeping them out of the process. Yes, it does. It could, Chris. I agree. And again, I wrestled a little bit with that one, but tried to be consistent with supporting the closed primary, which I was supportive of, and thinking that a party should be able to choose its own candidate without influence from people outside that party. So we do have a large portion of unaffiliated in the state, and especially in our district. I think it might be the largest percentage are unaffiliated in our district. But that's how I voted on that one, and we'll see what happens in the Senate.
Okay, one more that's come up and has gotten some press up here at least is a bill was passed by the House repealing a state law that bans groups from parading in public with guns. Basically, it discourages unregulated militias from forming, I guess you would say. And that passed the bill the House just this week. I don't think it's gone to the Senate yet. But what was your take on that, and how did you vote on that?
So that came out of the Transportation Committee. So I was able to hear all that discussion. And oftentimes, there's deeper discussion in the committees when you're mulling over a new idea there before it gets to the floor. As it was presented by our National Guard, it seemed superfluous to them that it wasn't truly removing that prohibition, that there was still something else in code. I couldn't cite it to you right now as far as it wasn't quite as severe as it may have seemed. Now, my thought is, I think it did butt up a little bit against the First Amendment there and Second Amendment in that sense, as far as your right to free assembly and to bear arms and going in that. Certainly don't want rogue groups walking around, but if they're not committing a crime, there's still things in place that if they are committing a crime, then they could be held accountable to that. But if they're just minding their business, I didn't see a problem with that. I think it's a constitutional right to do that. And that with what we were being told in committee, that there was more of a backstop than it appeared there was in other sections of the code, that gave me comfort in passing that or voting in favor of it coming out of committee and on the floor. So I don't think it's going to necessarily stimulate people marching through Sandpoint repeatedly with guns and trying to intimidate people, because if they are trying to intimidate people, then that's a crime in itself in that sense. But certainly don't want to ever inhibit the right to free assembly and the right to bear arms in that sense. I don't think that's an appropriate role for us in any sense of doing that. So mainly it was motivated by the governor's Red Tape Reduction Act, and that's a lot of what we're seeing through these committees, is that every facet of the executive branch is going through and trying to narrow down what they have that's regulatory or redundant so that our code is much smaller and the rules are much lighter that the citizens have to deal with in that sense. So that's where that stimulation for that bill came from. And I think it looked a little bit worse on the surface to some folks than it will actually play out in real life.
Did you say you were on that committee?
Yes,
the Transportation and Defense Committee. Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there was, as I saw in the news, it seemed like most of the folks that gave testimony on that were opposing it.
There was,
or was it split group. Up differently?
Most of the testimony was against it, and it was from a group called Moms Demand Action, I believe, which are an anti-firearm group of mothers. And that happens sometimes, that you will get more testimony in one direction or another, but that's not the sole thing that sways us. Of course, we listen to everybody's testimony and their reasoning, but we're still making our own decisions based on what's in front of us and other things that we consider. So I would agree most of the testimony was against that bill, but I think most people felt in line with the constitutionality of it, and that there was, again, some further safeguards in other areas of our code that would prevent some of the things people were fearing.
Just 1 minute. Anything else you'd like to throw out your constituents out there?
Thank you to you. I appreciate this opportunity to speak to constituents while we're down here in in session, and I'm home every weekend. If somebody wants to meet with me and discuss something, I'm always happy to do that. And you can reach out to me on the legislative website or my cell phone with 610-4800, and I'm happy to do that when I'm home. I think we might go a little bit past the 25th with the budget issues, and then we need to wait to see what the governor might veto. But always happy to meet with people when I'm back home as well.
Okay, well, Sage Dixon, our representative and the House of Representatives in Boise, thank you for taking time to talk with us.
Thanks, Chris. I always appreciate it.
We're speaking now with our District 1 State Representative, Heather Scott. Heather, I want to say thank you so much for taking time to talk with us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
And I know it's really busy down there. We only got about 15 minutes, so let's jump right to it. And really, I'd like you to tell us, you know, how you feel the session is going and what is some legislation that might be pending that you'd like to give your constituents a heads up to keep an eye on.
You know, it is so hard to even keep up with some of the stuff going on. It's moving very quickly down here. I think there's a urgency to get out of session because it's an election year. And I think we always see this because everybody wants to get home and campaign, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. We have not done the budgets yet, so we set the budget for the state and pass all the appropriation bills, so that hasn't happened yet, but we're moving very fast. I think we're doing over 20 bills a day. We're meeting 10 a.m. in the morning until noon, and then we're coming back after lunch for another hour or so just to get through all the legislation. I don't know that there's anything that's jumping out to me that's just so great or so bad. I guess there are some really bad bills. They've been coming out of Judiciary and Rules Committee. That's maybe a committee you want to keep an eye on. And I can't off the top of my head, there's one we just kind of got killed indirectly and sent back to committee, but there's something about housing, and I know there's a housing problem, but this coming bill that seems really bad to me is using government and setting up agency and working private-public partnerships to deal with corporate housing. So I can get into more details of that in my newsletters, but that's one bill I'd kind of keep an eye out for. It's just maybe not what people want to be doing with their tax dollars. And a lot of those dollars are going to go to the big cities and not Sandpoint, Idaho. So anyway, that's kind of a long answer. I don't know if I covered what you need.
Okay.
I'm all over.
Well, one thing, I know there's some bills still pending that might offer some tax relief for property taxpayers. I don't know if you're up to speed on any of those.
Well, so here's the deal. We have so much money that we have collected as a state in people's taxes. We are sitting on almost $2 billion. I think it's over $2 billion, $1.9
or big.
$2 billion of your money. And it's interesting when there's a bunch of money, it's just kind of like when you get a check and you get some unexpected money, it's real easy to think you need a bunch of stuff. And so a lot of agencies are coming and wanting supplemental money. They want supplemental money for this program or that program or a new employee or build their agency. And ultimately what we like to do is give a tax back to the people. Now, they did pass one really lame bill that literally would give you $20 back in 2 years. So everyone would get an extra $20.
That's on that grocery tax. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're like, well, yeah, we passed a gas or we passed a tax. Well, a tax relief. To me, that's a lie. I mean, if people that don't dig deeper than that headline, they're going to realize they're going to get $20 in 2 years, and with the way of inflation, they're not going to get anything, likely. So we have been trying to call up the grocery tax repeal. This would remove the tax on groceries. Why that is so important, In our area, we are so close to the border towns, and people just go over the border and get their groceries with no tax. We have the money to fill in that gap, and they will refuse to give a real grocery tax relief. But we have tried to bring that up on the floor almost every day of session. And since then, they're starting to realize, and when we stand up, we share that we're not getting any property tax relief. So I do think there is a bill starting soon. I know the Senate has been working with a guy in the House, and they're going to run that probably within the next week. I think you're going to see a property tax bill. I have no idea what it looks like, but they have to give property tax relief. And what we really need is real property tax relief that's not just shifting it onto another people group.
Okay, so that's something for folks here to watch, this tax legislation that's going to be proposed and will be coming up. Well, let me ask you about a few bills that you've gotten in the news up here, hundreds of miles north, so we don't always know what's going on down there. But one of them is a voter affiliation bill that will require unaffiliated voters to join a political party earlier in the year than they can right now under the current rules. Actually, they'll have to declare a political party for the primary election by March 11th, if this new bill gets a final approval. And that was approved by the House. I guess it goes to the Senate now. But I just would like to hear, what's your take on that, and how did you vote on that one?
Sure. I voted in favor of that, I'm pretty sure. So it really protects the political, the integrity of the party. So there's a platform in each party. You know, one party socially thinks one way, one socially thinks another. And so in order for them to pick a candidate, that's why you have a primary election. So you don't want people from one party picking your opponent. You know, I look at it as if you had two teams, the Bengals and the Steelers. You don't want the Bengals picking the team captain for the Steelers, and you don't want the Steelers picking the team captain for the Bengals. And so it's to protect each party's integrity. And obviously, you know what happens up north here, Chris. It's Democrats are a minority in North Idaho. And so a lot of Democrats will just register as Republicans and pick the weaker of the two candidates. And so it just discourages kind of that kind of behavior, and tries to keep the primaries are about picking who the candidate will be for that platform.
I'm sure that happens up in around here. I think we all know that does occur, that Democrats register as Republicans just to vote in the primary. But we have about a third of our voters that are basically, they're independents, they're unaffiliated voters. And those are folks that are, I assume, maybe waiting until the primary. See, well, what side of the ballot do I want to vote on in this primary? And do you think those unaffiliated voters, people that really are kind of independents, do you think that this will kind of disenfranchise them because they won't be able to vote in the primary unless they need to think ahead at least?
Some of those are libertarians, some of them are constitutional, and so that those candidates will be on the general ballot. So there will be, I think there will be independent candidates on the ballot come November. And so I guess if you get enough of any of those, enough constitutionalists or enough libertarians, they would have their own primaries. So that's kind of what it's set up for. It's kind of to pick whoever's going to run for that party, and then it's all really fought out in November.
Okay. Well, let's move on to another. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
No, that's good. That's good. I'm good. Okay. We don't have much time.
No, trying to squeeze in a few here. Another bill that was just passed in the last day or two, I think. It's House Bill 475, and it would repeal a section of law that's actually from 1927 that bans quote, any body of men, quote, from being able to parade in public with firearms in a city or town. And it's basically, I think, aimed, that old bill from 1927 is aimed at private unregulated militias. And this restriction will be removed if this bill passes that Senate and gets signed by the governor. And the governor's already indicated he's in favor of it, actually. So what was your take on that bill, and how did you go on that one?
I almost think that everybody voted in favor of that bill, even the Democrats and Republicans. I think everybody, I may be wrong, maybe you can pull up that, the voting tally, but I don't think there was any dissenting votes on that, because it does violate your First and Second Amendments. So I think that was completely unanimous.
I don't have a story on that in front of me, how the vote went in the full House, but I do know that, I'm looking at a story that when it was in committee, there was a number of people that spoke out in opposition to it. Their concern being that, you know, the armed groups that we saw in 2020 in Coeur d'Alene and Sandpoint were intimidating to other citizens.
I'm looking right now, and it looks like, no, that was a party line vote, Democrats versus Republicans, 57-13-0. So I think that was pretty much a majority vote. 57 out of 70, almost 60 out of 70.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And but you were in favor of it, obviously.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think people can be intimidated by shirts they don't like. I have had some people that say, you know, if you fly a certain flag, that's intimidating. And so, you know, where does that end? That's why we have a constitution that protects rights to carry. And, you know, that doesn't mean you can do criminal activity. That's a whole nother story. So just because you have a gun isn't a bad thing.
Okay. Well, we're only got a few minutes left. It's amazing how fast this goes. Another one that's been in the news up here just recently this week was the House voted to approve a measure that will keep Idaho in the Powerball lottery after the game expands to include a couple of foreign countries, the United Kingdom and Australia. And I'm not sure. Oh, the vote was 41-25 to approve that. So what's your take on that bill, and how did you go?
I voted against that. I mean, I have no problem with people buying Powerball tickets or lottery tickets, but it is a state monopoly in this state. They don't allow other people. I mean, they regulate bingo, and I don't think you can play poker, and so it's a regulated monopoly, and now they're going to expand into two other countries. And it's like we've got plenty of opportunities for the monopoly here. I don't care what they say. They're like, oh, the odds are still the same. But you add an extra million people in a game, and your chances of winning have to go down. If it was 1 in 10, you have a 1 in 10 chance. If it was 1 in a million, you've got a 1 in a million chance, in my opinion. So I wasn't buying their argument. That bill came through last year, and they told us, oh, if it doesn't pass, Powerball is going away. It never went away. And I think the really thing that the real big problem I have with this bill, we're voting on this bill, and they don't even have the contract available to look at. They don't have it in front of them. And it gave the director of the lotto, a bureaucrat, it gave him the decision. He can do whatever he wants now. We basically gave away our authority. He can basically do what he wants for his monopoly. And I think that's irresponsible, because even though we think it's a lottery, your taxpayer dollars are paying a lot of money to the Idaho Lottery commission, and for all the employees and all their, you know, bureaucracy, things that bureaucrats do, whatever that is. So I just think it's irresponsible. So not, you know, if you want to buy Powerball, that's your choice to do what you want with your money. It's just expanding this into other countries. The other thing too, and I didn't have the time to research it this year, but last year when we looked this up, there's a ton of fraud in these other countries with they can't protect the trademark. And so Powerball, you know, that logo you see, it's they can't protect that in these other countries. We brought up a lot of fraud where the numbers on one day for the Powerball were numbers somewhere else completely different. And so I think there's a lot of opportunity when you get into these countries, and many of them socialist countries, you know, you're just looking for trouble.
Okay. Well, that's that particular one. And that's, again, that passed the House, so I guess it goes to the Senate now. So we'll see what happens over there. And with that, we're almost out of time. Heather, I know you have a newsletter. If folks want to get on your newsletter mailing list, how do they do that?
You better text me these days. Or you can just send me a note. Send me an email to repheatherscott@gmail.com or heather@heatherscott.com, and just ask me to be on my email. And I've got a couple bills going on. I introduced one that said you can't deny people from using cash. Not sure if that's going to have a path forward. I had one other bill that passed the House that basically said if the voters vote no on a bond, you have to wait a year before it goes back on the ballot. Some of these districts are running these bonds over and over and over again until they pass. So it costs a lot to do that. And I think voters are getting they feel like they're being ignored when they vote, and then it pops back up in 2 months. So,
mm-hmm. And you said that bill did pass the House?
It did pass the House. It's in the Senate.
Okay.
No, the Senate probably won't hear it, knowing them. They're pretty liberal over there, so maybe next year.
Okay. Well, Representative Heather Scott, I want to say thanks for taking time to talk with us, and I hope to circle back with you maybe at the end of the session, and we'll catch up again.
Sounds good. Thank you, Chris.
We're speaking now with our District 1 State Senator Jim Woodward. Jim, thanks for squeezing some time out to talk with us today. I know it's very busy down in the Idaho legislature right now.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's always good to have the chance to let people know what is happening in our state government.
Well, we're about halfway through the session now, if things go about like a usual year. But I know some of the biggest legislation is still out there to come. What are some of the significant bills coming up that you'd like to let residents up north here know to keep an eye on?
Oh, you bet, Chris. One of the things that we're working on is the wise use and implementation of some of the ARPA money that's been made available this year. We know that really that federal money is coming from is borrowed money, and so we want to put it to use well. I say borrowed, and it's added to the national debt. And I do take that seriously. If you look at our national debt now as a percentage of gross state product, we have a national debt right now. If you look at that graph that over time, and you can see three spikes, you can see that our national debt in World War I, our national debt in World War II, and the level of debt we've accumulated right now as a function of our gross domestic product. I think I slipped on that one, but gross domestic product. And so we have accumulated a lot of debt, and so we take it very seriously. But this money that is ARPA money, we can either utilize it here, put it to use for our children and grandchildren to benefit from, or we can reject that and it would go elsewhere and also get spent. It's not, we don't have that decision at the state level as to whether that money gets spent or not. That decision was made at the federal level. So some of the things we're working on I was really happy to see today, too, some language in regards to the Department of Environmental Quality budget and the money that's going to come out over the next 4 to 5 years for improvements in rural water and sewer systems. And one example I can think of that I've worked on the last couple of years is the Mission Creek water system, and they have a higher level of uranium present in the water source at that water system.
And sorry, where is that, Jim?
The Mission Creek, which is just north of Bonner's Ferry.
Okay.
And so that water system, it's just not feasible for a small water system like that with 20 or 30 members to try and put in the kind of treatment system that's required. So that it's been an ongoing struggle to meet national requirements just without the sense of reality of what it takes to meet those requirements for a small group of folks. So I'm hopeful that that's one example of an upgrade that could be made with some of this money that'll be coming out through a grant application process with the Department of Environmental Quality. Mm-hmm. Spoke last week with somebody from Southside Water and Sewer. They have some concerns there and some improvements to make. Just every system out there that you can think of, every water or sewer system out there will be eligible in some way for some of this money. And so we'll do our best to get folks connected and submit those grants and try and make some of these improvements here locally.
I should throw in a definition here. So ARPA money, that refers to the relief funds that are being provided by the American Rescue Plan Act. That's a federal act that's making money available to states for things just like this, I suppose.
Yes, I appreciate that, Chris. I try to avoid the acronyms when I'm speaking, but I let that one slip. So thank you.
Well, yeah, I know. We start using these terms almost automatically, I think.
Yes. So another program that I'm really excited about this year are some of the improvements we'll make in our transportation system. We were fortunate enough this summer we're going to see that work done at Lakeshore to improve that intersection at the south end of the Long Bridge. And that's that was from work we did a year ago. And we'll also see we have a lot of new money coming in to the local units of government, cities, counties, highway districts, through some funding provided this year. We put together a $200 million package that'll split between the Idaho Transportation Department and then local units of government. So that's the $120 million to IDD in addition to what they normally receive, and then $80 million going out to cities, counties, and highway districts through the normal distribution account. So that was a $200 million pot, and then we have another $200 million pot that should also be beneficial to us in our rural areas, and that's for bridge improvements. We know that a lot of our infrastructure, if you look at the dates on it, a lot of the small bridges around the counties were built 50 to 70 years ago, and that's a typical design life for a bridge, somewhere around 50 years or more. You get beyond that, concrete starts to deteriorate, or timbers or steel are either rotting or corroding, and then that bridge becomes limited in its weight capacity, and that starts to hamper our economy. We can't haul logs or can't haul any other products across that bridge, or it's reduced. So we're starting to work on that backlog of bridges that were, so many of these things were built in the 50s and 60s after World War II, and it's time to go back and revisit those structures and do some upgrades or replacements.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject of funding, I know the legislature passed, and I believe the governor's already signed a tax relief bill that's going to send some money back for people who have paid income tax. Question being, do you think anything is going to come up again with the grocery tax?
So that tax bill, yes. Well, to just touch on that briefly, as part of the overall package this year, we knew that we had a lot of extra money this year, money coming from increased economic activity, money coming from the trickle down of the stimulus checks and all of that extra money. We had $8 billion added to the Idaho economy, and the Idaho economy is about $82 billion. So we saw 2 years ago an extra 10% put in. Last year, $5 billion extra put in. So we did have a lot of money to work with this year, and we took that balanced approach in returning some of that money in the form of a tax rebate, which is 12% of your 2020 taxes. So if you go and look back on what you paid in taxes in 2020, you can expect to receive a check this coming up soon for 12% of that. Going to the grocery tax, I like to make sure it's clear up front that I agree we should not tax ourselves. As state policy, we should not tax ourselves on something we have to live. But there are a couple ways of doing that. And the way we have a system in place now, and of course, there's the other option is to not tax at the cash register at the grocery store. But the system we use now, we return that money to ourselves at the end of the year. We've fallen behind on that amount, if we want to keep the system in place that we have now, we should adjust that amount. There is a bill in the legislature right now to increase the amount of the grocery tax credit. Every person who files taxes gets that grocery tax credit on Form 40. And so a family of four would get the grocery tax credit for all four of those people added into that. If you don't file your taxes, it's still pretty simple to file Form 24 and still receive that back. So that's the system now. And I do hear from people that that's a little bit cumbersome. If you're not filing taxes, you're not required to, then why do I have to go fill out another form and get my money back? The advantage to the system that we have now is that people from out of state also pay that grocery tax, and people who live out of state don't. If they don't file Idaho income taxes, then they don't get that credit. And so that number is somewhere at least around the $20 million mark of out-of-state money, that if that $20 million from out-of-state stays here as taxes, that means that as Idahoans, we don't have to pay that $20 million. We still have to have the services in place that that money provides. That's roads, police, prisons, and so on. So we can't avoid that cost necessarily, but we can transfer the cost to some of the folks from out of state who are coming here and creating some of the demand for those services.
Mm-hmm. And
so that's why.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to conclude that that's why I do somewhat favor the system we have in place now. As an Idaho resident, you get that money back. We need to adjust it. But it also avoids the contention around trying to decide what is food and what is not. Because when we go to do that, there are a lot of different ideas about what is food and if we decided to repeal grocery tax at the cash register, then what would we define as food and what would we not call food?
Yeah, is a Pepsi a food, for instance?
Exactly.
That would be a good question. Okay, and that bill, that one passed the House to increase the credit, I think $20 per person. Is that still to be decided in the Senate?
It is. Yeah, there are a lot of politics around the grocery tax. And typically people are fairly, especially in the 105 legislators, they all have an opinion. I thought when Senator Vick out of Coeur d'Alene or Hayden put that bill forth, I thought based on where he stands in the legislature, and I thought that it would be a good chance of that bill moving forward. And right now it seems to have stopped. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen there.
Okay. Well, we got only about 6 or 7 minutes left, and I do have a few particular pieces of legislation I want to ask you a question about, but anything else you'd like to bring up that's coming down the pike here shortly that legislation you might be working on?
There's a proposal that might come out this week in regards to property tax and sales tax, and I'm welcoming the idea and glad to hear it as an idea. I think we need to make sure that we don't repeat a mistake we've made in the past. The proposal is to take property taxes off of residential owner-occupied properties. So if you, the house you live in, the property taxes on that house would go away except for supplemental levies, school supplemental levies, and any bonds that have been approved. I have not seen this in writing. I've just been it's been described to me, so I'm relaying that. But that this should come out through, as a bill this week. But to take those property taxes off of residential owner-occupied, how would we then make up that money? The money right now pays for the roads, waste transfer, solid waste, all these other functions that happen at the county level. And the proposal is to make up that money by increasing the sales tax in Idaho from 6% to roughly 8%, maybe just a little bit below 8%, but something close to it, almost a 2% or a 2% increase in sales tax. I'm a little leery. This is, seems like a very analogous situation to 2006 when we shifted, got rid of the school M&O levy. And because property taxes were high and there was a real problem with property taxes and it's hard on folks, we shifted that. We went from 5% to 6% sales tax, and then we got rid of the M&O line item, the maintenance and operations line item on the tax, county taxes or taxing district taxes. And then we saw a recession not long after that, and it really threw a threw a stick in the spokes of that plan. And right now we're long overdue for a recession. We've been running strong for years and years, and property taxes are a problem because we don't have a system that works very well in these big upswings. And we're proposing shifting from property tax to sales tax. So I'm a little bit leery of it, and we'll see what the details are when it gets printed.
Do you know what that bill number is, if people want to keep an eye on it?
There's not a bill number yet, but if you watch the committee agendas for the House tax, House revenue taxation, revenue and taxation, then that that bill will come up first. All tax bills have to originate in the House.
Mm-hmm.
But
okay.
It's not printed
well,
yet.
Let me swing to a couple of minutes we have left here, a few bits of bills that we're seeing discussion of up here, at least. One is a voter affiliation bill, and that would kind of advance the date that people have to declare party affiliation to March 11th. And what's your take on that one?
Well, I think it's too late for this year, but there still may be an attempt. But today is February 28th, and we haven't seen it in the Senate yet. And so by the time it goes through the Senate and then on to the governor, just the normal routing times and times for signatures, it could be past March 11th. And the bill is written, so it would take effect this year. I just don't believe that is not a good policy to change something on without with no notice or retroactive notice to change that requirement. I also think that we have a large number of what we're talking about is voter affiliation at the polls and the ability to walk in and ask for a ballot for the party you'd like to vote in. We have a big group of unaffiliated voters. There are many people in Idaho are in Idaho because they love the independence and the freedom of Idaho. I think they're tired of partisan politics. A lot of these folks are traditional conservative Idahoans who don't want a brand on their back. And so they'd like to be able to walk in and vote and participate in the voting process. So I think that I'm not supportive of changing that. I'd like people to be able to walk in the polls, and if they're unaffiliated, which I think is at least, I'm told, about a third of the voting population is unaffiliated.
Yeah, that's the number I've seen as well. Okay, another one that has recently got some news up here is the vote on the Powerball, keeping the Powerball lottery going. after it expands to the United Kingdom and Australia later this year. And the House voted to approve that, but there was some discussion down there. Yeah, what's your take on that one? And I assume it'll be coming to the Senate now.
It is headed our way now. I don't think there should be the level of contention around that in the Senate. I think folks recognize that the Powerball being in different countries is probably acceptable, just like McDonald's is in different countries. Powerball is, of course, gambling, but we allow it here in Idaho. We actually changed our constitution in Idaho to allow that, the lottery. So I would imagine that the acknowledgement of the, I believe, the United Kingdom and Australia joining Powerball, I think folks will be comfortable with that.
Okay, last one that I was going to bring up is the somewhat more controversial legislation that would repeal an Idaho statute that prohibits private militias in Idaho. And that's House Bill 475, and it has passed the House, I believe. What is your take on that one?
I have not had a chance to read that bill yet, so I don't have a lot to comment. I watched the headlines. I think that the original intent was a little bit of code cleanup. It's a 1927 bill, but I'm not sure that all the thought was given to it based on what I'm reading in the headlines, but not sure enough thought was given to the implications. So I'll be watching it, and we'll see if it advances in the Senate or not.
Okay. Well, Senator Jim Woodward, last minute here, anything you'd like to put out there?
I'm just looking forward to we'll get everything set in place here this year. It will take us about another month. I anticipate that we'll be finished up by the end of March, and then we'll be back and we'll make the case with folks, or hopefully make the case with folks that if they're interested in having me serve again, I will do that again. The primary is May 17th, and I'm sure everybody will be well aware of it as all the signs go up and the activity surrounding an election starts.
Yeah, that's coming up pretty soon. Well, good luck finishing off the session down there, and thanks so much for taking time to talk with us.
You bet. Thank you, Chris.